It is almost 3 a.m., and you know what that means. Witches, goblins, and ghouls are about to be at their most powerful, and supernatural activity is about to reach its climax, if you will.
So pull out your harnesses and strap on your broomsticks, because it's time for
the Bitching Hour. Hey everybody, I'm Maggie, and I just need to put all of my cards on the table right now and let you guys know that I am an Aquarius, and also I have a webbed toe.
Hey everybody, I'm Mia. I'm your resident Doritos Locos Taco Femme, and I have a newfound fetish for webbed toes.
Get out of my house.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Coming up on the show, we take it back to MySpace bulletin surveys and get to know one another even better. Then on the main brew, we are coming out of our dorm room closets and sliding into your DMs for a nice trip down emotional claustrophobia memory lane to discuss being queer in college. Finally, we finish up with Killing the Game. Mia's joined OkCupid and Maggie's 3 seasons into rewatching Skins.
All right, here we go. So we are gonna play a little game today. I don't know if any of you remember those MySpace bulletin surveys that you would take. Also, I think they carried over to Facebook. You know, where they asked really...
At least in the beginning.
Yeah. I think my sister and I did a bunch of them. And, you know, we just were learning a lot about each other. They probe into like your kind of like your deepest secrets and past. So we decided that today we're going to do a little bit of a get to know you, but also a little bit of a test. And so we're going to fill one of these out. There's 10 questions, and I'm going to do it for Mia, and Mia's going to do it for me. So, and then we're going to compare. First question is, do you have any nicknames?
So Maggie's nicknames include Mags.
True.
Magster.
That's my Twitter handle. I'll tell you guys.
Scotty.
True.
Man, I'm thinking of one that your parents call you that I can't remember. Margaret. Scotty. I think that's all I can remember. I know there's one that your dad calls you that's really cute that I can't remember.
He used to do Magpie and Magnolia.
Yeah.
And there was another girl in my elementary school whose name was Maggie, and we were best friends. And she used to call me Magadocious. So
ew, like that TV show.
We could bring that back too. I wouldn't mind.
Yeah.
Okay, so nicknames for you. We got Mia, Mimi, Peels, P-E-E-L-Z, Peel-Z. I don't know. Is that it?
No, you're forgetting my favorite one. The hint is that it's something I also really enjoy about the internet.
Oh, me. Got it. Memes. I see
that's
what
my,
you did.
That's my favorite nickname.
Someone called that a meme in front of me the other day. Like, M-E-M-E. I hate it.
All right, the next prompt is tattoos. So, Maggie's tattoos. So, we've got the brotherly love symbol.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on your right arm?
It's on my back.
It's on your... Oh, yeah, it's on your shoulder.
We're going to be this specific.
Should I be less specific?
No, I mean, you can do it. It's just I'm not going to be able... I don't know if I'm going to be able to replicate this.
All right, so I'll just list them.
Okay.
So you've got the brotherly love tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a hummingbird that I can currently see.
Mm-hmm.
There's an octopus.
Mm-hmm.
There's flower... Is there some other birds or flowers? most importantly, lest I forget, is the infinity symbol.
No, so you forgot. I also have tulips, and I have...
Tulips. I knew there was flowers.
I have the
Fembodiment.
The Fembodiment tattoo from Amsterdam.
Yeah.
So.
I'm covered up.
Okay, you got...
I feel like I have less than you, though.
Mimi had... I feel like you have more because you have so many, like, little stick and pokes.
I'm gay.
Mimi has her house, like a portrait of her house.
I forgot.
And a bunny in a little wreath. And a Venus sign on her finger that Carter
stuck and poked. It's on my wrist, actually.
Oh, yeah. And, oh, I know you have more than that.
No, I did. I stuck and poked that one.
Really?
Yeah, he never gave me a tat.
Oh. Carter, if you're listening, I'm disappointed in you.
Yeah, you should have tatted me up when you had the chance. Do you want me to finish?
No. No, you definitely have more, and they're definitely on your arms.
They're only on your arms.
I feel like you have, like, an herb.
Yeah.
Is it sage?
I don't know. It's like an ambiguous sprig. It's like mm-hmm. going into my armpit.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. Is that it?
That's it on this arm.
Fuck.
There's two on this arm.
Can I phone a friend?
So I also have an envelope tattoo.
Yeah. Oh, duh. That's yes.
It's a best friend stick and poke with Elise on my forearm. And I have a tattoo that was drawn up by Devendra Banhart.
There
you
okay.
have it. There you have it, kids.
There you go.
All right. Next question. Last time you saw your mother.
Oh, I'm going to go first on this because I was thinking, as soon as you said that, I was thinking, oh, Mia was going to go home to Western Mass last weekend, but she didn't because of all the snow, like messing up everybody's travel plans. And then I was thinking, when is the last time Mia went to Western Mass? And it's because you got your hair did. And then I realized that I think you stayed at home. So I think it was like 3 weeks ago, a month ago.
It was January, I think.
Oh.
I think it was late January. But it was, you're right about the context. Mm-hmm. It was the last time that I got my hair done and I just like went home to hang out and I hung out with my mom. Mm-hmm. I think my brother was in town too. The last time that you saw your mom was just recently, right? You guys went to Jersey and Philly?
No, just right? We went to Jersey and then Nancy and I went to Jersey to see her family. And then my sister and her baby and my mom met me in the middle. Yeah. In between Northern Jersey and Philadelphia. And so we were in Trenton at a mall.
Just chilling.
And just like hung out for like 4 hours at a Johnny Rockets. That's it was nice. Really nice.
That is really nice.
So next one is last person you texted.
I have to look at. So I'm guessing the last person you texted is your mom.
Is that your final answer?
It's either your mom or your sister. I'm going to say your mom.
It's Constance.
Ah, damn, I should have known.
I told you that I got that text. It's about the Fosters, so.
All right. Who's the last person that I texted?
I'm going to say, who was it?
Last person that I texted was a girl from Tinder.
Oh. Oh, we talked about that, too.
Yeah, she's cute.
Mia's blushing. Okay.
Next question. Do you believe in miracles?
I don't know. I don't think you do.
I don't.
I don't think.
I went to Catholic school and I absolutely do not believe in miracles.
All right. Just get that done.
I think that Maggie is agnostic about miracles.
Wow. That is exactly the way I would have described that.
No way.
I mean, I like a good spooky coincidence.
Yes.
But I'm not going to call it. I'm not going right. to say that
You're
that is
not
a miracle.
Say, oh, thank God for this miracle.
Yeah.
But I think that you're more apt to see a coincidence and be like, oh, this is like a meaningful
yeah.
like thing that's like worked out in a pleasant way. Mm-hmm. Whereas I'm going to be like, I don't know, I guess I didn't die yet. Next question.
Next question. Oh, when was your last physical fight?
Physical fight.
Shit, I don't know if you've ever...
Does roughhousing count or, like, fight?
I feel like if it was not just out of happiness purely, like, if it was, like, kind of a funny fight, but you kind of meant it, that could count. Or, like, something that you were angry about. And it doesn't have to be, like, a serious, like, fist fight. But, like, you know, like, you like, shoved or some fun.
Yeah. Well, I shoved a little bit recently when we ran into my...
You were just answering for yourself.
Oh, yeah. Shit. I did
show. No, now you have to keep going because I don't think That's I would story. Do this for you. Yeah.
All right. So I did a little shoving recently when we went to a bar in Boston and you were there, Maggie, and my ex's ex.
Oh, I was there.
Was there. And for some reason has some weird beef, even though, girl, I think he's stupid too. Like, what? I don't understand why either of us wasted our time. But she was being kind of aggressive towards Elise, and I'm pretty protective of Elise. So, I mean, I played it cool, but I was definitely, like, kind of ready to mm-hmm. to shove her around if she fucked with us anymore. And I was definitely, like, she would, like, dance into me, and I would, like, make my body stiff against her and kind of shove her.
I like that. I don't remember the last time I've done anything like that.
I know that you punched a boy in high school in the face.
Yeah, I did. I did do that, but that was a really long time ago. I don't think I haven't like actually like fought anybody since then, and that wasn't even really a fight. But I did. I think I've done that. I've done some like angry dancing. You know,
You shove people when they're in your personal space. That's normal.
Yeah, or when people are gross, you know, and like saying mean things or like being kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that counts.
Yeah, people deserve it. Next question. Do you twirl or cut your spaghetti? People, for the people at home, this is a friendship-ending question. Maggie?
Mia, I know that you twirl your spaghetti.
Thank God.
Because I'm not a narc, so.
Yes, correct answer. Maggie.
How much do you trust, like, how much do you trust me as a friend? Like, how, like,
I know.
I'm now going to learn, like, what you think of me as a person.
With what I believe.
With what you think my answer is.
Here's the thing, Maggie. I think you twirl, but I also think that you could get down with cutting.
No.
Never?
Here's why. I used to cut my spaghetti like a little bitch. Sorry, that wasn't very nice. I used to cut my spaghetti. Sorry, everyone who does that.
You're but a bitch.
It falls off your fork.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like spaghetti, I want it in big bites.
Right.
Like really big. And it just, I was, once I was old enough to hold a spoon to twirl it against, or just to twirl it against the side of the bowl,
mm-hmm.
I was old enough to be past cutting.
You were old enough to fight for this country.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I was ready to like lay down my life for, you know, the right bite. So, well, I'm glad we can still be friends.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, Mia, do I believe, everything happens for a reason?
I don't think Maggie believes this.
You're right. I absolutely do not believe that at all. I think it's horseshit.
Yeah.
Like,
I think that, I'm going to go out on a ledge here and say that I think that if you, so I'm in a research methods class.
Mm-hmm.
We talk a lot about surveys and all kinds of bullshit like that. I think that if you surveyed this country,
mm-hmm.
the majority of people who believe that everything happens for a reason are straight.
I think that's, I would never have like put that together, but I really think that's true.
I think that queer people experience so much bullshit for no reason that they're like, no, there's no reason.
Yeah.
All this bad shit keeps happening to me.
Yeah. No, that's, I think that's completely true.
A legacy of queerness is one in which bad things happen to good people for no reason.
Wow.
Mic drop.
So I'm going to guess that you also don't believe that actually, everything...
I believe that everything happens for a reason, and I think God put us all here to live out a specific purpose. I'm here to serve the Lord.
Okay. Oh, I like this next one. Okay, what year was your best age?
So Maggie's best age, I'm going to guess, was 22. Because we became best...
It's when our friendship went from good to great.
Yeah.
22 was a really good year.
I was thinking because you guys stopped being, you know, like 900 miles apart.
Yes, my girlfriend and I did move to the same state after spending a lot of time apart. But it was definitely a good year for that. But it was also, you know, it's like college graduation year, which is,
right.
You know, everyone's, it's rough.
A nightmare.
You know, So I think it's like a tie between honestly like 20 to 22 and like 8. 8 is a good year because you're old enough to be able to do stuff. You're not old enough to be like super embarrassed about things yet. And like I'm one of those people who like I have always been sometimes like I got really good at hiding it, particularly in high school, but like I'm always really eager about stuff, like just there's no other word for it, just eager. Like I like what I'm doing, I like school, I love classes, I love band, I love swimming, I love yeah. all my activities. And in second grade everybody else is that way too.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get older and everyone's like you
too
suck
cool.
Yeah,
yeah. I love that about you. You're never like too cool for the things that you just give a shit about.
Yeah. I was not, for a long time in high school, I did not behave that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy to be back. So
yeah, welcome back.
Happy to be 8 again.
What do you think is my best age?
Mia. I feel like also somewhere in the 6 to 9 range was fun for you as like one age period, because you talk about like being young and like, I guess I don't know what age it was that like you and all of your brothers lived at home. And then like, I think it was like, maybe it was like your mom and your stepdad were like getting together. And so like you guys were like spending so much time with so many kids all over the place that sounded like, at least it like sounded like a lot of fun to me. So that I would say is one of them. And then also probably like right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 6 to 9 was actually rough.
Oh,
sorry. No, nothing like super traumatic, but I started puberty really young. Mm. So I was like very upset and confused as a small child, like, why do I have boobs at 9?
Mm-hmm.
But the period, but you're thinking of the right period. You're just thinking of it earlier in my life. So when I, around middle school to high school, especially early high school, was just a fucking ball. I have 4 older brothers, and we all lived in this big old house in dusty-ass Springfield, Massachusetts, and we all grew up together, and we were just friends with each other's friends, and our house was the house that everybody went to, and it was just really, really fun, and it was, like, a really good experience growing up. It was just a blast, and now I really love my life, and I'm really happy, and I feel like I've got a good balance of school and fun and friendships and romantic relationships and snacks and spending time alone. Honestly, this is maybe the first time in my young life as a Libra that I've ever maintained a balance of anything. It's all going to come crashing down, but at least I have a podcast now.
Cool. So to just take that kind of like contentedness and turn it on its head, what are you most afraid of?
Oh man, what am I most afraid of?
But like not serious, like you know, just like spooky.
I'm really afraid of ghosts.
Really? Do you believe in ghosts?
Yes.
Okay, but like, no. What kind of ghosts?
Demons.
Ooh.
Wait, what do you think I'm to answer?
Yeah.
I just answered.
That's okay.
Damn it.
Wait, what do you think I'm most afraid of?
Okay, I think Maggie is most afraid of... I don't think you're into spiders.
False. I actually don't mind spiders at all.
Really?
I kill them all in our house. Nancy...
What are you afraid of?
...is the worst and can't kill a spider. I am super afraid of snakes. Always have been. Whoa. Always will be. Particularly snakes on water. It just... It's fucking not natural.
I really hate that too,
it's
guys.
It's so... It's like... It's like their little muscles don't catch on anything because there's no traction. So they're just flicking around.
A professor told me a story about she was getting a report about a patient, and the other nurse told her, oh, allergies? Yeah, he's allergic to snake venom.
Oh.
And she was like, aren't we all?
Yeah, that's a hard yes.
Like, what do you mean?
No, I'm extra allergic. Like, you guys would probably die of rattlesnake, but like, I'd also be itchy.
Yeah, I just break out.
Okay, all right.
So that's that.
So this week we wanted to do a little bit of a coming out episode because, you know, everything gay everything gay should not have to have one, but
here we are
anyways. So we decided instead of picking, you know, like the most horrendous coming out stories. And also because you come out literally your whole life to everyone always.
We're tired of it.
So we picked a little spot in time, and it's also the place where Mia and I met. So this is kind of like how our friendship got started. And this is being queer in college.
We have some questions that we want to talk about, work through together. I was wondering if Maggie, if we wanted to just briefly talk about our two sentences, our experience in being queer in college.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to go?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so I will say that Maggie and I went to Mount Holyoke College.
I didn't.
Oh.
I'm just kidding.
Were you just around there?
Yeah, I just hung out. I was just a ghost.
So Mount Holyoke is a small private liberal arts, quote-unquote, women's college. Historically women's college. Interesting place to be. Very queer.
Mm-hmm.
Super enchanted. It's a cult.
We were just ranked, according to, was it Washington Post, the bottom of the 7 sisters in terms of, like, all outcomes.
I'm into the idea of bottoming the 7 sisters.
I think the top was Wellesley, which is just too perfect. I don't want them to top me. So.
I've been topped by Smith.
Really? Whatever, I looked at Smith.
I got into Smith.
Oh, man. I didn't even apply. I refused. It was, Smith was one of those schools where we drove on the campus, and I refused to get out of the car. I refused to get
out of the car, too.
Yeah. I was like, I'm not going here.
Yeah. And then Mount Holyoke was like, ah.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was out before college, but I went to a small Catholic school, didn't know a lot of other queer people. My best friend, who I now live with, identified as queer. Well, we were kids. Back then, nobody said queer. Back in the old days.
What did you, when you first came out, what did you say? And bisexual. Who was it to?
The first time I came out, now we're just telling our actual coming out stories.
What hit me, I don't whatever.
The first time I came out, my brother and I were watching TRL. I was 9. Mm-hmm. I think Sierra had just released the video for Goodies. And I was sitting on the couch with my brother, and I was breathing like this. And my brother said, why are you breathing so weird? And I said, I'm not. What are you talking about? And he said, you're breathing so weird. You know, when you're like, your heart is racing and you're trying to control it. So you're like mm-hmm. breathing very intentionally. And it's just, mm-hmm. my brother's like, why are you doing that? And I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, are you gay? And I just said, yeah. And we didn't talk about it again until I got into Mount Holyoke. And he said, are you going to that lesbian school because you're gay? And I said, yeah. And that was it. And then I came out to my mom. My parents were very accepting and mostly didn't care, which made me upset in its own way. But I guess, you know, now looking back at it, I'm like, oh, poor you. Your parents loved you and didn't give a shit. But yeah, a lot of people in my family kind of did that thing where they're like, oh, we knew.
And like, you're like, no, you didn't.
Fuck you. You don't get to say that. Yeah, you don't get to take this, like, moment from me. But also, little did I know at the time that I'd be doing it every day for the rest of my life. So, honestly, they can have it.
I hate it when people say that because it's like, but in all seriousness, like, you're not queer unless you say you're queer. So, no, you didn't know. You couldn't tell. And shut up.
Right. Like, right. You don't get to decide for me before I put words to that.
Right.
But, yeah, that's the skinny. And so I came to Mount Holyoke being quote-unquote out, but having only dated one cis man,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, not really knowing a lot of other queer people.
Interesting.
What was your experience like before Mount Holyoke, Maggie?
Well, so I came into school very much unaware that I was queer. I remember as, like, a little kid thinking about it. Like, I remember things. Like, do you ever think back? I really hesitate to, like, rewrite my own childhood as, like, oh, I was, like, just a queer kid who, like, didn't know anything. And it's, like, no, I was doing my best. Like, I was doing the absolute best that I possibly could. And, like, what I was feeling at the time was as real as it possibly could be. And so, like, I just... Like, some of it is cliche. Like, I asked my high school boyfriend to join GSA with me, like, as straight allies, just, like, really excited straight allies. And he said no. And, like, I, like loved, like, I, like, I was just obsessed. Like, the kids who, like, stay up late and, like, watch gay movies. And, like, your parents are like, okay, well, whatever. Yeah, the kids are all right. It was great. I met Benning. Really talented, you know. So, and my dad had a couple gay friends who I met, like, once or twice. And I remember being, like, I remember, like, asking my mom about them and being, like, okay, but, like, can you catch being lesbian? And my mom was, like, no, you can't. And that was it. But anyways, I dated dudes in high school, and I had, like, a couple serious boyfriends, and then I was, like, hooking up with a bunch of dudes, and I did all the way into Mount Holyoke. Like, I went, I was going off campus to party most of the time to, like, find the straight scene at Amherst. And honestly, kind of stumbled into the whole thing by accident. I, like, somebody that I was doing, someone who was in the Jewish Student Union with me, one time after we had been hanging out in a large group, there was somebody, like, the first woman that I hooked up with, we had, like, been, like, joking, flirting, play fighting, whatever. And it was just me and this friend of mine from JSU, and she said, hey, I just want to, like, throw something out there, and I'm not trying to sound, like, accusatory, but, like, what's up with that? And I got really, really angry and, like, cried and was like, I don't know why you're, like, what are you trying to accuse me of? Like, and just, like, out, like, I didn't even, it, out of nowhere. Like, I didn't think I cared that much. And she was like, hey, maybe you're reacting so strongly because there's something going on. And I was like, you can go fuck yourself. Like, I was, like, so mad. But yeah, and then she was right. And I came out then, and I came out to my family on the phone a lot. For it takes a couple times, I think.
Yes, totally. And I feel like I came out to my mom. So our friends used to joke, so at Mount Holyoke and at many historically women's colleges, I think there's this really fucked up thing called lugs and bugs, which is when you refer to someone as lesbian until graduation or bisexual until graduation.
Oh, I was marked as a lug as soon as I started hooking up with women.
Which is a really horrible way to think about anyone's sexuality, because especially in an age where we talk about queerness as kind of the baseline assumption being that people are allowed to have a fluidity as part of their sexuality, that's really nice. So I think that lugs and bugs obviously is really horrible for putting people into these boxes, and that's the exact same thing as telling somebody that their bisexuality is a phase, or their queerness is a phase, or any sexual identity, you know, it's it invalidates their sexual experiences.
I wonder if, well, two things. I mean, I wonder if, I guess this isn't like a topic that like younger friends of ours who are like in the like 3 to 4 year range younger than us. I don't know if that is still something that people use. I don't think it is either, because I think that's just really not. But it was when, especially when we were like first in.
Yeah, we were at the end of it, I think.
Yeah.
When we first got there.
But the other thing it makes me think of is, it's so interesting to like watch, at least for me, I didn't realize that this was kind of like a well-known thing. Like I came into Mount Holyoke like feeling like I had no freaking idea what was going on. And like there was just so much to learn about like being in like a women-centered space and a primarily women's space and like a like space where there's a ton of lesbians. Like it was like not really anything I was used to before. And there's, I mean, as we know, like white supremacy and patriarchy and all of these things, like they replicate themselves, and like we see that in like beauty standards,
and they're insidious.
Exactly. But I didn't realize like what kind of value authenticity, quote unquote, was gonna have, and like the idea that like you had to be really gay, you had to prove something.
Yeah So anyway, this is a idea that exists at Mount Holyoke, that Maggie and I and a lot of our other queer friends have long thought is really problematic for the reasons that we just said. So we made fun of it. And one of the things that we did to make fun of it was, so I came into college being super queer, identifying as bisexual, identifying as queer, once I kind of came to have that knowledge, that language to describe that and whatever. And so, but I always had a boyfriend who was a cis dude, just a straight cis dude somewhere, always off campus, that long distance relationship, in a band, living down the street, wherever. Like I always was dating some fucking guy, mostly nice guys, but
they were cute. They like came around too, you know. It wasn't like they never came to campus.
But so Maggie, I think, was actually a key component in jokingly calling me a sug straight until graduation. Which was really funny. But so I, so my experience of being queer at Mount Holyoke was interesting, because it was kind of this like this constant battle with feeling inadequate and feeling somehow invalid, because I was in what looked to be straight relationships, but I also kind of looked queer, so I had this kind of cred as being queer, and but always felt like, well, I really don't, you know, I don't have the sexual credit. And I remember, I mean, the story I told of ghosting, I had attracted this super cool, beautiful girl because she thought that I was like this older senior who like knew what I was doing. And I'm like fucking freaking out because I've never had sex with a woman. But
we met first year, and I thought she was 2 years older than me and just like a well-established. I also thought that you and Jasmine were dating when I first met you. So they were roommates. They're just like best friend roommates. So cool.
Yeah. People always thought that I was older. I'm a well-established lesbian. But it was all a farce. But I, the first woman that I had sex with was actually much older, and was just like a very kind and gentle and sweet person who really just left no space for that kind of bullshit. That kind of having to feel like you're proving yourself, having to feel like you're queer enough, having to, like, it was just like, dude, it's just like, dude, this has got to be a tender experience.
Yeah.
Because this is an emotional experience, and this is like, part of the beauty, I think, of queer relationships and queer sex mm-hmm. is that intimacy and vulnerability don't require the same kind of seriousness mm-hmm. that I've experienced in a lot of straight relationships that are mm-hmm. that appeal more to gender norms or to like certain standards of what's okay and what's not. Mm-hmm. I think that like having a relationship or a sexual relationship that's already based outside of many norms allows you to be more vulnerable with your partner from the get-go, mm-hmm. which is really nice and really made me feel safe in that.
Oh, so you're saying that you find that like vulnerability comes easier
in queerness.
Yes, I see what you're saying. I thought you were saying the opposite. Specifically. I was like, that's not been my experience.
Straight men always make me feel good.
That's really interesting because, you know, you were talking about feeling like you had to prove yourself. And I remember pretty much like until, so I dated like a couple people or I like, you know, hooked up with people. And then I met my current girlfriend who I've been with for like 4.5 years, my beginning of my sophomore year. And so most of my time at Mount Holyoke, I was with somebody the whole time monogamously. I remember like pretty much until that point, it wasn't like I like wasn't hooking up with people. It wasn't like I wasn't like making friends and doing queer stuff and going to the Jeanette Marks house, which is like the LGBTQ cultural house on campus. But I remember being so worried that people were going to find out like that I wasn't really gay, because I remember like I still very confused and like sometimes I still am. I think a lot of men are so fucking beautiful. Like, mm-hmm. it's complicated. And I remember at that time being like, oh my God, like, I have to divorce myself of all of this. Like, yes. And I didn't identify as a lesbian. I specifically identified as queer for that reason. But I still was like, people are going to know. People are going to know that I don't really know how to have queer sex. Mm-hmm. Whatever the hell that means.
Yeah, what?
I just was like, everyone is going to know. Everyone's going to know. Honestly, I was worried that everyone was going to know that I didn't want to top. And like, I associated like lesbians with topping.
Yeah.
So I don't really know what I envision lesbian sex is going to be like. It's just like, just fighting. But like,
just mud wrestling and wet t-shirts.
But I thought there were only tops and bottoms. And I was like, well, I don't want to be a top, so I'm probably not really gay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was rough.
No, totally. Totally. And it's a really, and if there's anything to make you feel like trapped in the closet. it's feeling like even when you finally come around to have the language to describe yourself a certain way, feeling like a community of all those kinds of people are gonna think that you're invalid or somehow not actually part mm-hmm. of that group is really damaging.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that part of the reason that I really didn't date at Mount Holyoke, so that sexual experience that I mentioned earlier happened when I was a senior, mm-hmm. spring semester, senior year. But that was so, so late into Mount Holyoke. And I really, I think there were definitely people at Mount Holyoke that I had crushes on. There were definitely people that showed an interest in me. And I was in relationships at some point in every school year, I was mm-hmm. in a monogamous relationship with some dude.
Mm-hmm.
But I was single, you know, in between that on campus. But I was really intimidated by the drama of dating somebody on such a small campus. Oof. I was terrified of becoming a lesbian bed person, which is like...
Lesbian bed person?
Yeah, so like before bed death, when two people start dating and then they just spend all their time in bed and you never see your friends again.
Oh.
Bed people. But anyways, I was there was a lot of things, like the way that people got so connected so quickly at Mount Holyoke, I think I was really intimidated by the way that relationships kind of function and all these people knowing, and I just felt like... It was a lot, and it intimidated me to the point that I was like, I'm just never going to hook up with anyone. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to seem like I have really high standards, but actually I'm afraid of people, like, thinking I'm not authentically gay, or thinking I'm mm-hmm. not gay enough, or that I'm bad at sex, or I'm...
Yeah.
So that was part of it.
It's also hard to break into. It's so interesting because, like, I think, you know, we were talking about how in primarily women's spaces, the same, like, kind of... messed up white hetero patriarchal standards repeat themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's one of the ways that, like, you know, nobody said to me, I mean, I had some like bad sexual experiences with mean people, but like primarily nobody, like none of the queer people that I was actually hanging out with, or the even the queer people that I would like go and see at parties and was really intimidated by, they were not being they never said anything to me. That's the whole thing, is that, like, no one ever spoke to me. I was just so paranoid because of this, like, honestly, swagger that, like, I was never going to be able to, like, figure it out. And I think that that kind of, like, that prioritizing of, like, the just the perfect amount of, like, butch and athletic and, like, but not too butch and not too athletic and still fun and drinks but doesn't drink too much and, like, short hair and, like, that, like, just James Deaning around campus. Like,
James Deaning. That's what all these bitches are doing. Yeah, totally. And then fast forward to, so when we, the fall semester after we graduated, fall 2016, I went to a party because a friend of ours was still there completing her last semester, and I went to a party with another alum who lived in Western Mass near me, and we were sitting and we were talking to a first year and just being friendly and chatting, and the first year was like, oh, I like your hair. Kind of looks like, and then she said the name of one of Maggie and I's best friends from Mount Holyoke, who did not go there, did not date anyone there, was not there, like, did not spend time on campus, and I was like, what? And she's like, oh, you don't know who she is?
You're like, yeah, I've never met her.
I know her social security number, bro.
Do you really know her social
number? No, I'm just kidding. Do I know who she is? I was like, yeah, she's one of my best friends. And she's like, oh, you know, but it's like this super weird phenomenon of like, no one's trying, you know, this friend in particular is not trying to perpetuate a white masculine image as like the ultimate popular queerness, but she happens to fit those identities and then becomes idolized by these younger queers because these systems are just insidious and just perpetuate themselves unless we're constantly speaking against them.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I feel like you kind of like, you have to do work to make that not be a thing, to like,
and it doesn't, and that work doesn't just mean saying we're not doing that.
Right. Like, that's one of the things we've talked about a lot with, like, it, when we were first years and sophomores, people still openly used the term BDOC, which was Big Dyke on Campus, which, honestly, I know is fucked up, but, like, it's still really funny.
I love it because I love the idea of flipping, like, a stereotypical jock trope on its head.
But, like,
but the way it plays out,
it's very fucked up. I mean, it means that, like, people who treat women like sexual objects to conquer and, like, portray a really toxic masculinity and, like, think that all masculinity needs to be toxic masculinity, like, destroy shit. It's terrible. Yeah. And, oh my God, actually, I have to tell you this story. So my, like, one of my, like, absolute, like, queer heroes when I was at Mount Holyoke, she was, like, she was 3 years above me. So she was a senior when I was a first year, but she was a little bit older than most people in her year. So she's, like, actually more like 5 or 6 years older than me. And she was on the swim team with me my first semester, and she was really sweet when I came out and just was sweet in general. I loved her, and her then girlfriend was also really nice to me. And I was like, it was just lovely. She taught me how to, like runny yolks, and, like, she showed me the L word. I don't know why runny yolks I associate with lesbianism, but okay. I do.
It's like licking his runny nose. Pussy eating.
But I remember I didn't know what a BDOC was, and her girlfriend told me what it was. And then I was like, oh, so, like, your girlfriend, because, like, she, to me, she was, like, really cool, and, like, people really, like, she had seemed to have a ton of friends. But the connotation. But, and she also, it's so funny, too, because she was, like, the sweetest, most nurturing, most involved, like, femme, not white, gay person on campus.
Because here, like, you come into the scene thinking, oh, this is a space where we get to finally, like, make the rules, and it doesn't just get to be an old boys club. Mm-hmm. And then everyone else is like, no, we're just going to do that, but instead it's women who are the old boys. Just older white women. And you're like, but why can't we just not
do that?
Do that.
And I remember just when she found out that I had assumed that, she was like, Maggie, no, like, you dipshit. No, I'm not a BDOC. So anyways, but yeah, I think that getting back to the general concept, like, we people used to use the term BDOC non-ironically or less ironically. And it's kind of gone out of style. Like, when we were seniors, people stopped using it, and they were like, oh, that's a gross term, and, like, you shouldn't say those, like, we shouldn't perpetuate that. But it's not like those things didn't happen,
right?
And it's not like those people didn't, like, it's not like these systems didn't continue to perpetuate themselves. And, like, you know, I'll say we too, like, as a white masculine person on campus, like, didn't do enough work to be like, to actively go against it. Just saying that it's not cool is not enough.
And I think that we were like, mm-hmm. let's not idolize this. But that's not the same as actually dismantling the systems underlying mm-hmm. that and the social hierarchies that develop. It's not enough to just pretend it isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it's really important to acknowledge the insidiousness of those systems and the way they'll continue to perpetuate themselves, especially in mm-hmm. queer communities. And I don't think that that is a Mount Holyoke specific thing. I don't think that is a Western Mass specific thing. As someone mm-hmm. who's from there and stayed there after graduation for a bit, like, that's just a thing mm-hmm. in white supremacist society.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also like, it's been interesting moving to Boston. Is not a big city, but it is actually a city, and moving here and like doing gay shit after graduating has been really interesting. Being like coming out and like coming into queerness in a women-centric environment that is like very much primarily lesbians and bisexual women, like at least that is like who's kind of like dictating the social structure on campus, that is not usual. You're not going to find that everywhere. And I think I just kind of forgotten that gay men existed until I moved to Boston and was like, what the hell is this? Like, all these queer nights, there's like no women here.
Right.
Like Kylie Minogue night.
Yes. Maggie was very surprised to attend Kylie Minogue night and discover that most of the people there were twinks. Well, I was like, Maggie, it's Kylie Minogue night.
I was just like, why are so many men here? Yeah.
Yeah. This was never the way it was in a sunroom party at Mount Holyoke. Yeah, so thinking about being queer after college. So the really nice kind of full circle thing about being queer after college for me is that nearly every one of my friends from high school is now out.
Mm-hmm.
There's one person that is not out, but he actually stopped. He kind of fell out from talking to most of us by the time he went to college. Anyway.
You exiled him.
We exiled him because he was straight. but out of like six people, every single one of us, three dudes and three girls.
Wow.
Or two dudes and four girls.
That's so interesting.
Are all queer. Yeah. So that's really nice. And some of which friends from high school live in Boston.
And in your apartment.
And in my apartment, which is really special. So that's been really nice. I mean, I moved here in September and it really made this such a positive change in my life to move into a place where there was kind of a nest of that kind of community. I mean, community mm-hmm. in general, just having friends here, but mm-hmm. specifically people to say, oh, these are the places that you're going to go and feel comfortable. These are the mm-hmm. places you're going to find people you want to date. These are the places where you're going to feel safe and you're going to feel welcome mm-hmm. and you're going to have fun. And
mm-hmm.
I now go to Simmons,
mm-hmm.
which is another historically women's college, another primarily women's space.
Mm-hmm.
My program, because it's an accelerated second bachelor's, is not in contact with undergrads that frequently, but I am around them eating and hear conversations, and that's really funny. Yeah, and it's interesting to see, you know, the very little bit that I do see of, like, their kind of queer dynamics on campus. I almost went to Simmons originally for undergrad.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I chose between Mount Holyoke and Simmons, and chose Mount Holyoke, and now...
Thank God.
At Simmons. Yeah, honestly, thank God. But maybe would have been easier to become a nurse.
Yeah, so sorry about that.
But so I think it is interesting too, because in my cohort, a friend of mine in my cohort and I were like talking about how many people are queer in our mm-hmm. cohort. And of 30-something people, like 10 people are queer.
That's so cool.
Which is kind of a lot. And I was wondering...
Yeah, it's a huge amount.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that my worldview of this is so skewed sometimes. Like, I've been so spoiled to be constantly surrounded by queer people, mm-hmm. to have all of my friends from high school now identify in a way that's not straight,
mm-hmm.
and to have gone to Mount Holyoke, to have grown up in the Pioneer Valley, to have lived afterwards in Western Mass and go to shows where bands announce their pronouns before they play and yes. people, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. we're like... There's mm-hmm. there's a preference for queer and trans people of color to play on a bill. And there's mm-hmm. shows that are, you know what I mean? Like, spaces that are dedicated to these identities. And then to go to Mount Holyoke and to go to Simmons, where the majority of the people I'm around are going to have similar experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been definitely a nice buffer, too, of moving mm-hmm. somewhere new, is like still having spaces like that. Every day when I walk into the library, I walk by the queer student like club or yes. organization room.
Yes.
And they're all in there with their Tegan and Sarah, you know, self-bleached pixie cuts and,
yes.
you know, nothing's changed in the past 5 years.
40 years.
Six years.
I just, you know, you were saying, like, it's so, like, you get so spoiled being around all those queer people. And I think about that a lot, actually. So, you know, that study that they released that, like, if, so you have, like, men and women in, it was about, like, gender disparities in classroom participation. And so it was, like, if it's actually 50-50, if like girls and boys are speaking at the exact mm-hmm. same amount, the boys think that the girls are speaking like 70% of the time.
Yes.
But then if the girls are only speaking like 30 or 40% of the time, the guys think it's equal. Like they're mm-hmm. like, oh yeah, this is 50-50. And I honestly, so that can happen in queer spaces too. Like when I bring straight people into like queer spaces that I inhabit a lot, they'll be like, wow, this is like so gay. And I'm like, this isn't a gay space. There's just like more than 20% of the people here are
yes.
gay and also like fit that kind of visible queerness that you are used to. And so it's like, it's made me a lot better at like never falling into that. Like it makes me a lot better at being like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like I am still going to have my guard up. This isn't necessarily a queer safe space just because like there's more than one other visibly queer person in the room. I don't know. So yes, I think that's been interesting, but
it is interesting. And I think it's interesting too to, and I think it's important. I think it's important to still hold that kind of critical view about the queer spaces that we inhabit, you know, like
mm-hmm.
a marginalized identity like queerness
mm-hmm.
does not give you a free pass to do whatever the fuck you want.
Mm-hmm. We don't have to talk about queerness in the workplace. That's a fucking nightmare.
That, not so much.
So
yeah, that's the brew, I think.
Well, I want another brownie. Okay.
That felt good.
That did feel good. I think we're good looking. I think we sound amazing. I think.
Yes. This is Killing the Game.
Welcome to Killing the Game.
So, Maggie,
what have
how did you kill the game this week?
I watched three seasons of Skins in the same week that I got a 92 on my midterm. Who says women can't have it all?
Congratulations, Maggie. What was your midterm on?
My midterm was for my developmental psych class. It was all multiple choice. It was great. It was 50 questions. I killed it. I got a 92. And yeah, three seasons of Skins. I think I'd only ever seen the first one. Like in college, I watched it. And now I'm really enjoying getting into it. I realized that every spring, when, you know, you want the weather to be better and it isn't and it's Boston and we're kind of like settling in for a second winter and, you know, it's terrible. I really get into like a weird TV show where like people are too wild. Like, I watched
right,
all
you're,
of...
you're stuck up in the house with cabin fever, so you watch people, like, teens go wild on
yeah.
TV.
Yeah. So this year it's Skins. Last year it was Queer as Folk. So that's it. And it has to be kind of weirdly old.
Right. Yeah, you should watch My So-Called Life.
Oh, yeah. I've already seen My So-Called Life, but I would rewatch it.
I should rewatch that.
Yeah.
This week I dyed my hair.
Yes.
Totally out of the blue. I woke up yesterday and I was like, wow, I don't like this. So I just fucking did the damn thing.
Mm.
And mm-hmm. I dyed it myself and I feel great.
Mm-hmm. It looks really good.
Thank you.
I've also felt it and it feels really luscious.
It feels like luscious.
The first thing Mia said was like, dude, you need to feel my hair because I used boxed hair dye and it feels better
yeah,
than it did before.
It feels really good. Also, I used my sourdough starter to make pizza dough.
Oh, did you make the pizza?
That was tight, yeah. Oh. I did it on the snow day, the first snow day. I ate it all.
That sounds really good. Damn.
So I'm really proud of my sourdough starter. Someone from school, two people from nursing school have made my bread recipe,
mm-hmm.
and one person from school asked if she could bring her own jar, BYOJ, she made up that acronym.
Oh my God.
On the spot. Asked if she could bring her own jar over and have some of my sourdough starter, which is really flattering.
That's so nice.
Very wholesome and sweet.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
If you're from my nursing school and you're listening to this because I talk about my podcast a lot during school, what's up?
So thank you guys for listening to this episode. This has been Maggie and Mia with the Bitching Hour. So join us next week. We're going to be talking about queer intergenerational relationships. This is a topic that I think people tend to not have any feelings on. And, you know, I think Call Me By Your Name has really demonstrated that, that it's just a neutral...
Just a totally laid back, neutral topic, you know, for casual dinner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's what we, you know, that's how we want to...
We want to play it cool.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, join us for that.
Thank you.
Bye.